This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 5th of October, 1954. The title of this lecture is Basic Elements of Processing. This tape is 59 minutes long, reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I want to give you here the basic organization of any course. Now, this I mean that in Scientology or Dianetics. I don't care which subject. There is a basic course from which we take off. And until we have that basic course in very, very, very good shape, I'm not now saying that the basic course is not a professional course. This is actually the HCA level information which has to be known and thoroughly. And unless we have this particular set of basics thoroughly known, we just go on drifting and floundering and stumbling around from there on out. Now, I can tell you this, that I'm talking from experience on this particular line in training auditors. Heretofore, there weren't processes which could be easily done, precisely stated, and which got good results that we could do this with. So you see, the advance of the subject itself took care of the training. Now, there's certain very, very definite basic things that we have to have, that we must know, that we must know very, very thoroughly, and that somehow or another we must accomplish before we can go on into anything like theory. And therefore, these first days of this course, we're going to stress these things very heavily. I'm going to expect each one of you to become very expert in these things. Now, the items which an auditor must know if he's going to get anything done in any pre-clear anywhere, which he must know today, are only seven in number. Only seven of them. And they're in this order, by the way. The order is quite important. Number one is a two-way communication. He has to know two-way communication. He has to have the basic idea about it, the basic material behind it. More important than that, he has to understand two-way communication and how it fits in an auditing session. If he doesn't understand two-way communication, believe me, he's never going to be able to audit. Now, right under two-way communication comes comlag. When you study two-way communication, you study comlag also. These two subjects are inextricable, and as they exist, so you audit. Now, if you just knew this, if you just knew two-way communication, comlag, and you didn't know anything else, you would still make some progress with cases. But more important, you would be able to understand every pre-clear you confronted. You'd be able to understand what they were all about. It would be on this adjudication, on a two-way communication basis, in the comlag, which they demonstrated. And you could, as you walked down the street, as you looked at people around, as you tried to live with people and so forth, you would understand what they were all about. See that? If we understood this and nothing else but this, we could look at a group of people and we could know who in that, let's just apply it on a beautifully broad business basis. We could look at this group of people and we would know who in that organization was gumming the wheels of that organization. If we just knew this, two-way communication and comlink, we knew nothing else but this, we could walk into an organization and we would appear to a business executive to be an absolute magician. We could talk with this one and that one and circulate amongst the groups and ask a few questions. And the next thing you know, you could say, well, your business volume would increase in your sales department if you would fire Jones, Smith, and Spiegel. And if you would put Mr. Dameron in charge of sales. No. How did you know this? Jones, Smith, and Spiegel have the most horrible sales record. They have lost more equipment and lost more orders. How did you know this? Now, here then is a terribly important subject all by itself. So this one we just have to have nailed down, I mean with spikes. And not, he's got to know this. He knows that a communication lag is what it is and it operates as it operates. There are two ways that communication lags can operate, and one is by outflow and the other is by no response. A communication lag is the length of time between the question and the exact answer to that question. See, that's the lag. Now, it doesn't matter what happens in between. It's all lag, whether the fellow is talking like mad, raving, screaming, crying, or is silent. See, the lag between the question and the answer. Whatever happens in between is the communication lag of the person. And some of the worst cases you're ever going to process are people who evidently have no communication lag. Well, they talk all the time, don't they? And yet they never answer the question that you ask them. You walk around through life, and you'll find people do this. They don't ask the question you ask them. Once in a while, somebody does this for a gag. He teases people. On a line, they ask him some question. He believes this is kind of a foolish question, so he gives them some razzle-dazzle. This comes under the heading of a sense of humor, not a communication lag. But in the normal course of human existence, you'll find out that the communication lag is the easiest index by which to recognize people. But more important, if you don't flatten a communication lag, or if you don't flatten the lag on a process that you start to audit on a preclear, your preclear isn't going to recover. He's just going to bog until you've dropped him in innumerable communication lags and never got your question answered. You always want to get your question answered. That is the subject of communication lag. A lot more to this, particularly there in practice. It's a terrifically important subject. But here we have it as number one, not because it's the most important subject, because it's the first thing we have to know. All right, let's get the second one. Number two of this list of seven things. Number two is elementary straight wire. The most elementary straight wire there is something you wouldn't mind remembering, something you wouldn't mind forgetting. That's the most elementary there is. But the idea of sitting down and asking somebody questions, of course, brings up the idea of a two-way communication. So you have to know about two-way communication before you know about elementary straight wire. You're asking somebody to research his past. And if you don't know about communication lag, if you don't use communication lag in researching his past, you don't keep asking the question until the lag is flat. You know, something you wouldn't mind remembering, something you wouldn't mind remembering, something you wouldn't mind remembering. You keep getting the answer to this, no matter what distances there are between the answer. You'll find out at first it takes him 10 seconds to answer, then 5 seconds, then 15 seconds, then 3 minutes, then 2 seconds, then 45 minutes. You know, on one of these questions. Well, you don't change the question as long as you got a communication lag. So as you got a nice flat lag, and he's answering it at a routinely regular spacing, and so forth. You leave it alone. You go on to the other question, something you wouldn't mind forgetting. And you ask him this. It's not uncommon with a straight wire question to run head-on into a communication lag of an hour or two. In fact, I've run into one. We have one on record of 12 hours on something you wouldn't mind forgetting. But it was a communication lag. We didn't go off to some other subject, you see, or some other process, simply because this was boiling this long. As an auditor, the person was foolish enough to ask this question of the preclear. See? Just foolish enough to ask this question of the preclear. So the second he asked it, the auditor was stuck with it. He had to get that question answered. And day after day, he was still expecting an answer to that question, mostly because he had an instructor riding the back of his neck, making sure that he carried that communication lag through. And when the preclear finally answered that question, he heaved the most enormous sigh of relief you ever saw heaved. Oh, it's tremendous. The fellow had been obsessively remembering everything his whole life, and this was really what was wrong with him. Obsessive memory. Something you wouldn't mind forgetting. There was no such thing. Well, here was a question of communication lag and two-way communication. That's elementary straight wire. Why do we have to know elementary straight wire, and why is it such a big subject? Elementary straight wire is a big subject. Because if you know elementary straight wire, a general form of elementary straight wire, 1,000 codified processes fall into place. But if the auditor has not crossed this one bridge right away, if he doesn't know how to administer straight wire, he'll fail with these processes. He'll fail with every darn one of them. It just won't matter. It won't matter at all how clever the process is, how clever the auditor is, what tremendous insight he has into the length of the ingrown toenails of the preclear. If he does not know how to administer, you see the mechanics of administering straight wire, if he doesn't know this perfectly, And of course, then, if he doesn't know two-way communication, perfectly. And if he isn't at ease in administering straight wire, then the brilliance of these processes mean nothing. And in that alone is the failure of an auditor, and was the failure of any auditor who did fail on a case in all of Dianetics. A good auditor can simply administer, this is also included in elementary straight wire, which is called ARC straight wire. Well, recall something that's really real to you. This is the first of it. It's in the back of self-analysis. You know that they've had that tool since 1950? And if you just went on using that, you just went on using it, people get well. In fact, a psychotic will break through to neurotic, or a neurotic will break out into sane on just that straight wire. But these boys did not know how to administer elementary straight wire, and their failure to administer it properly caused the process to fail. See, it's all very well to have this list of questions and ask them, but believe me, that's not straight wire. Straight wire is an art, because you've got to hold that preclear in two-way communication with you. You've got to measure that communication lag, and you've got to flatten that communication lag with every question you ask. You don't go on to the next question. You get a flat lag, completely flat, so you get an even spacing of reply from the preclear, and when you've got that, you're all set. That person will feel much more at ease. Elementary straight wire even remedies havingness. It's a very interesting process. I had a test auditor, by the way, audit something you wouldn't mind remembering, something you wouldn't mind forgetting, on a pre-clear until the guy was clear. It was a rough case. He was a black five. Took him 83 hours. The fellow finally realized that he could remember everything back to his entrance in the masked universe. So what? You do much elementary straight wire, and the fellow starts to fall through in earlier lives anyhow. You can't help but stir up material. It's all right for the society at large to agree that we only live once, but then they didn't have a process that they had to make work. The second you try to make a process work, the fellow falls through this flimsy agreement that we only live once, and he starts going off in other directions to the conclusion that he is immortal. God help him. All right. Now if we have those two things down, we have then developed the poise. That's part of straight wire, part of two-way communication, an ability to keep a preclear in communication with us. There's all kinds of ways to keep a person in communication with you. You know, there's a present time problem. There's all kinds of ways. Keep up that two-way communication. Keep that preclear fairly well at ease. Keep him from getting upset unduly in the session because of the immediate environment, know how to flatten his communication lags. There is auditing poise right in there. There is the aplomb of the auditor. Of course, a lot of the aplomb of the auditor is developed by the fact that he gets cocky after a while. If he's really good and well-trained, if he's really good, he gets cocky. He looks at people. He knows he can do things for them or to them. And therefore, he stops worrying about them. So his poise around people is rather tremendous. He even sometimes gets a little haughty. But that doesn't matter a bit if he can handle them, why they know it too. But there's a mechanic in handling people, and that's the straight wire problem. Now, number three is opening procedure of 8C. Why do we call it by this horrible title? It has a shorter title. R216 is the name of this. You won't find people calling it, however, by R216. You'll find them calling it Opening Procedure 8C. Well, it is the basic material, in the whole process, Standard Operating Procedure 8C. It is the opening procedure of 8C. So when they say Opening Procedure 8C, they mean Opening Procedure of 8C. And it's a very complicated thing. Now, it looks so simple. Mostly because its execution depends upon a thorough knowledge of a two-way communication and elementary straight wire. And if you know those things, you can do 8C. But if you don't know those things, you're not going to be able to do 8C. If you know those two things, 8C is a very simple process. If you don't know two-way communication and elementary straight wire, it becomes a very complex process, and the darndest things happen. Its basic operation is simply to ask the preclear to walk over in his physical body and touch a wall. Now, in Dianetics, we used to say to them, come up to present time, come up to present time. Remember? You can walk through a sanitarium and simply tell people one after the other, come up to present time. You'll get a few impossible cases to suddenly turn completely, impossibly sane. Just by telling people one after the other, come up to present time. Yeah, but what's present time? This stuff. Walls, spaces, objects, forms. This is present time. There's a little more to this. A little more to this. A bunch of sneaky stuff underlies a lot of this stuff. 8C has tremendous workability because it tells somebody to come up to present time. Next, it has tremendous workability because to the Thetan, nothing really operates as an adequate defense. A Thetan can go through walls, ceilings, and floors. He can sizzle straight through a planet and come out on the other side. He does not have mass. Furthermore, his perception can be very, very weird. He can make his perception almost anything he wants to make it. He has highly fluid perception. That's because he actually, in good shape, doesn't need defenses. Now, seeing is actually stopping your sight. You have to stop your sight on that wall to see that wall. So seeing is stopping. If a Thetan saw perfectly, he would be completely stopped, wouldn't he? So let's not worry about how well a Thetan sees or doesn't see. He can see outside, don't worry about this. But he can also see at will and at choice on various wave bands, all depending on what he's willing to stop. Well, that's the Thetan. How about the body? The body's the stuff that sees this stuff clearly. And the body is what wants this stuff. Why? Because the body needs a defense. And if it can have defenses, it's happy. And if it can't have defenses, it can't. There's a state known as paranoia, which we learned in Dianetics a long time ago was simply a phrase type thing. They're all against me, you know? But actually, paranoia is no defenses. That is basically what it is. It's no defenses at all. If you think this is peculiar, or that there is one kind of insanity known as paranoia, and another bad kind of insanity known as spoofanoia, and another kind of insanity known as psychiatric, you are very, very much mistaken. It happens to be a gradient scale of how closed in your boy is. That's about it. And what effort he is making to get out. And that's about it. He goes clear back into the past to try to get out that way, crawl out the bottom, so to speak. And he'll go into the future, too. Don't think that people aren't stuck in the future. I ran across a guy one time who was almost going mad. He was 3 hours in the future. Always. Stuck. He would know all the dialogue of a movie before he saw it run off. It was worrying him. They'd given him some electric shocks for it, too, and that helped him out. Now, all of these conditions of stuck in the past, stuck in the future, and no defenses for the body. That one, very interestingly, are remedied in opening procedure 8C, so it becomes a tremendously powerful process. Opening procedure 8C. How's it done? You ask him to go over and feel walls and make various postulates about it. You just ask him to walk around and touch walls and hold on to them, let go of them, and pick out spots and touch them. Why this touch them? You know, people think in group processing, they're running 8C, if they ask somebody to spot some spots on the front wall, they're not. That's not 8C. It is a sort of a group procedure, which comes out of 8C. But it's not 8C. 8C is walking your preclear around. That's the first thing it is, and having him touch things. And those two things qualify it. And these teach him that he has defenses. His body has defenses. As a Thetan, you see, he's maybe educated in the field of Gall's illusion, which is simply saying, you haven't got any defenses at all, fella. It's all illusion. Those walls are thin. They won't stop anything. Of course, we're good, benign people. We're thinking the right thoughts, but we don't tell you that the right thoughts are the thoughts necessary to make you completely crazy and blow your brains out. And that sort of lineup, as well as many types of mysticism, convince people that it's all illusion. Sure, that's right. They're perfectly true. It's all illusion. Fortunately, it's an illusion to people firing guns, too. And the gun is also an illusion, so is the bullet. But fortunately, the bullet knows it's real. The bullet knows armor plate is real. They don't tell you that, you see. It doesn't matter if it's all illusion. Bullets still get stopped by walls. If you were 1,000 miles away from the cops who were after you, you're not going to get caught. Space. If you're 10 years after the debt, statute of limitations have kept you from being a debtor. You get the idea. There are defenses. See? It's all an illusion to the thetan. But boy, is it real to a body. And if it's not real to a body, the body then has no defenses. So here's this body, able to be shot with the illusion of walls around which won't stop bullets. We get this weird idea, you see, on the part of a person. As a thetan, it's all thin and he can go through, so therefore everything is thin and can go through everything. So therefore, a body, you see, therefore is completely naked to the winds of the world. Well, this isn't true. Well, a fellow goes around, you see, and as a body, he finds out the walls are solid. He says, look, they stop bullets. Look, this is present time. See, he's saying all kinds of things. This is one of the most involved and complicated processes that ever went on. And yet, it is very simply done. But if an auditor doesn't know all the things it's doing, why, he'll probably cheer the fellow up in the wrong fork. The fellow says, you know, I can look straight through that wall now with my physical eyes. The auditor says, ah, well, I'm doing a good job. Like hell he is. This fellow's body has to be reassured that walls are solid, that you can walk on earth and not fall through, that distance is adequate protection, and that a length in time is adequate protection, because the body is a very difficult thing to protect. No defenses is the motto of any preacher you will ever process. So, we get to the next one. 4, opening procedure by duplication. Duplication is the primary thing in communication. Cause, distance, effect, with a duplication at effect of anything that emanates at cause, and you have a communication. And we could go into this a long way, but he explained how the telegram leaves New York and it says, I love you, and it arrives in San Francisco and says, I loathe you. And this would not be good, would it? Well, the body's effort to get forward in time and so get protected, using time as a barrier and defense, brings it to the conclusion that things mustn't happen again, they mustn't happen again, they mustn't happen again, they mustn't happen again. In other words, no duplication, no duplication, no duplication, and the fellow goes further and further, further out of communication. And this is the anatomy of communication. Duplication is. All right. An opening procedure by duplication is simply making him do the same thing over and over and over and over in the most duplicative manner possible. Book A, book B, book A, book B. And the whole essence of it is to make that boy duplicate. And a case that's bad off, if just started on this all by itself, would practically die in his tracks. It is a terrible process on somebody who has not had enough opening procedure 8C. He is not yet convinced, you see, that there are defenses. And you ask him to start duplicating, and you're telling him all the time, hey, look, things can communicate to you. Things can communicate to you. Oh, no, they mustn't. Germs, disease, bullets, blasts, bombs, government income tax forms. They can communicate. They can communicate. He doesn't want anything to communicate. If there are no defenses, then the answer, of course, is nothing must communicate, which is what he's dramatizing. The oddest thing is that this opening procedure by duplication is step one of Dirty 30, is so damned, is so furiously screamed at by every goof and nut and squirrel that runs across it, that you would think they had been personally wounded in the abdomen with a double-barrel shotgun. That's how hot the process is. You simply describe it to somebody who is, they mustn't communicate, they mustn't communicate, you know. And these people go, yeah, practically spin in on you. Well, you have to know that about that process, too. You bring a person out of that state with opening procedure of 8C. The odd part of the process is there are many, many people in the London Clinic, for instance, who had hung up. There are many people that auditors had processed for a long time who had hung up in processing. Auditors got them again. They ran some opening procedure of 8C, and then they ran some opening procedure duplication on them. And what do you know? Their bodies became alive, and they came right on out of it. They improved, and they squared around, and that's that. Of course, they feel very hypnotic when they first start running this. If you only run it for a half an hour on somebody, he's liable to get almost completely hypnotized. But are you hypnotizing him? No, you're not. All you're doing is running out hypnotism. And if you just do it a little longer, you'll run out the rest of the hypnotism, you see. So people get the idea it's an hypnotic technique and all sorts of things. We don't care what idea they get. We merely care that it's the workability, it's the basic anatomy of communication. This is a terrific process. It's very, very hard on an auditor who himself has not had it run on him. But it is therapeutic even then. The idea of giving that command over and over and over and watching that guy do the same thing over and over and over and over. Auditor who hasn't had enough HC run in and just absolutely gets utterly groggy. He just almost goes mad doing this. And that's why auditors can't flatten communication lags. See, they ask this question, you just watch an auditor who's real poor, case in bum shape, badly trained. You watch this boy work, and that's the way he'll work. Preclear changes, the auditor promptly changes. That's the first thing he does. He asks a question, something you wouldn't mind remembering. Well, what was the question again? I don't know, I'm having difficulty with that. Well, the auditor would say, well then, something you wouldn't mind forgetting. Nothing wrong with the auditor, is there? He just can't stand to duplicate, that's all. That's the first thing wrong with him. You'd say it's he can't stand to wait that long. No, that really isn't what's wrong with him. He just can't stand to duplicate because the preclear could answer that question immediately. You know, with no communication lag, and the auditor would still change it to the other question. The auditor can't duplicate. An auditor has to be in a good enough shape so that he can sit there and say, give me something else your mother wouldn't mind remembering. Give me something else your mother wouldn't mind remembering. And something else your mother wouldn't mind remembering. Give me something else your mother wouldn't mind remembering. Something else your mother wouldn't mind remembering. Something else your mother wouldn't mind remembering. Something else your for 5 or 6 hours without a single break. You say, this guy, you must get an auditor into a state there where he's completely insensible. No, it's only when an auditor is very sensitive and alert to his entire environment that he's actually well enough off to do duplication. So this is a very important thing, this opening procedure by duplication, isn't it? Now, we have item 5. And item 5 is a companion to item 6. But you can't do item 6 without knowing how to do item 5. And item 5 is remedy of heaviness. And you can't spot spots in space with a preclear on any but one process, R260, that I know of, without ruining the preclear, unless your remedy is heaviness. In other words, he starts to spot spots. Go through this process of spotting spots, looking out there and finding a spot. And by the way, I don't mean putting his finger on it. Yeah, I mean look out there, you see, and spot a spot. And then look someplace else and spot a spot. And then spot a spot in the middle of the room. You haven't do that very long, and any person who's having any difficulty at all will start to get sick at his stomach. Sometimes it takes an hour to get them to a point where they get sick at their stomach. Sometimes you could run them maybe 15 minutes without getting them sick to their stomach. But a case that's real bad off, you will just suggest that they look at a spot in space in the middle of the room and they will promptly feel nauseated. In other words, their heaviness is so slight that spotting spots blows it up, throws it away. Looking at a spot in space is as bad as taking his hat or his wallet. Get the idea? Second-hand spots in space, he is immediately robbed of some havingness, because all havingness is condensed space. And so you start to have him look at spots in space, and he's uncondensing his havingness, isn't he? And, of course, he loses. Well, he's lost too much in life, and that's the reason. In the first place, he believed he had to have something, you see. That's the first thing that's wrong with him. And then he lost too much of that, so he feels he can't get along without remedying happiness. By the way, it's the body that gets sick. Well, remedying happiness can be done in many ways, but the most elementary way to do it is having mock up something. Even if it's an idea or an invisibility or a piece of black dust, it doesn't matter what you have. He can always mock up something. He can always get some kind of an idea of this and have him pull it in on his body. Mock up something and pull it in on his body.
Please note, at this point in the lecture, a gap exists in the original master recording. We now return to the class where the recording resumed.
Okay, now we brought you up here and we're still talking about the remedy of havingness. The most elementary form of the remedy of havingness, of course, is what it is, which is pull in any kind of a mock-up. Now, the whole subject of havingness is a big subject. Well, this is real big stuff. Actually, the whole subject of havingness is the subject of engrams. And there is a loss substitute scale which would stagger you. And I think it's R259. A fellow loses the object, he substitutes object others. Object others tend to disappear, and he'll substitute a mock-up. You get somebody low on havingness and you run too many engrams out of him, you get somebody real low on havingness and you try to run one lock out of him, and he's got to pull in about five or six more locks to remedy that havingness. This fellow isn't creating energy anymore. He's taking already created energy and he's pulling it in on himself. And so you run pre-clears who just have the darndest appetite for electronic engrams. They will pull in some of the darndest things you ever heard of, and in they'll come. Swish, 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 swish. And every time you try to erase something, they'll eat that energy up. That's the only reason they want to erase it in such cases. And they want to eat that energy, and then they'll pop some more engrams, and you'll just stack, 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 stack. And after a while, you wonder, what's wrong with this guy? Well, the trouble is, he's reduced his havingness. And if you simply sat him down and remedied havingness properly, why, you would have a case that wasn't doing this with engrams. Aha, remedy of havingness solves engrams. How very important. Now, actually, the whole operation of remedying havingness, although that's its most elementary form, and that one you were expected to know, are right on up to pulling in eight anchor points on a thetan, you know, you should know more than this. A fellow ought to be able to throw things away. The only thing really wrong with a psychotic is he can't throw anything away. You see, his havingness is reduced. Now, every time a thetan wants to acquire something, he degrades himself slightly. This makes a little vacuum. So in it comes. And pretty soon, he's a negative vacuum. You get the idea? All the space he was occupying is full. And so he becomes a body. Now, there's much more to this. There's other types of manifestations. But if you just pulled in things on him, he would feel much better. Actually, at this level of training, we have to know how to pull something in and throw something away, which tells us that we have to know also expanded Gita, standard operating procedure 8. As old as that, we have to know expanded Gita, because you find many of these people can't have. So they have to waste some object until they can have it. They have to waste it so they can have it. Now, that's real weird, isn't it? They have to waste it, and then sometimes after you've made them waste it, you will have to have them stack up 80 blocks, 80 square blocks of warehouses full of it before they can pull in one of it. Well, you needn't get so specific as expanded Gita. The only trouble with expanded Gita, it was too specific. It added too many significances. Any havingness is better than no havingness. That is the motto of a thetan. Any havingness is better than no havingness when he gets into this state. So the basics of remedy of havingness that you're expected to know is the various ways and means that you would go about having somebody mock up something and pull it in And if he couldn't do that at all, to waste some energy or objects, and then walk some more up over alongside of him until he could pull some in. So you'd have to know really how to get down there and make that guy actually remedy some having. See, that's a little art itself. It's very simple. It's just as simple as I have stated. He can't walk something up and pull it in easily. Anything, you know, you don't care how what it is. And the mass is the thing. The specific identity of the mass is relatively unimportant. The mass is the thing. You have him waste it, and waste it, and waste it, and then see if he can accept one. And then after you have him accept it, and accept it, and accept it, he'll be able to get up to a point where he can accept it or throw it away. And that's the state you want him in. The only quirk in that is you have him stack a lot of extras over here before he pulls one in, but you actually, if you have to do that, haven't really wasted enough. So it's a simple subject, the remedy of havingness, but it is done very exactly. You have the fellow mock up something and pull it in. If you can't do that, you have him waste it and waste it and waste it, and then mock up one and pull it in, and then waste it and waste it and waste it and waste it and waste it, and then finally pull one in. Well, you will find some people are obsessive on this, so that they will mock up something, and in it comes, and bing, bing. Well, you'll start such a thing as an avalanche. And you can have planets, suns, moons, and stars. We've had an avalanche running on a pre-clear for as long as 3 days. That's perfectly all right. Let it run. It'll blow engrams. Boom, boom, boom. This is the easiest way in the world to blow engrams. Solve the problem of energy masses, you solve the problem of the engram. Now, this fellow may be hepped on havingness to such a point that he has to have before he can do. And all that. But space is quite important. A thetan who doesn't have space won't exteriorize. If he hasn't got any space to exteriorize into, he won't exteriorize because there'll be no place to go. And these fellows who have this idea there's no place to go and they sit home all the time just haven't any space, that's all. And they won't exteriorize either. All right, so we have to spot spots in space, and that comes up as the sixth one that we have to know, the proper way of spotting spots in space. Now, actually, the way you do this is you spot spots in space and remedy havingness, and spot spots in space and remedy havingness, and spot spots in space and remedy havingness. If you don't do one against the other, sooner or later, your preclear is going to bog. You might be able to spot spots in space for an hour without caving him in, and you may not notice it, and he may not notice it, but all of a sudden, he's having a lot of difficulty spotting spots in space. A huge black mass has now appeared all around him at a distance of 4 feet that was never there before. And you say, well, the thing to do is just to spot some more spots in space. And now it's 3 feet. And so he spots some more spots in space, and now it's 2 feet from him. And he says, oh, wait a minute, you say, what distance do you actually think Chicago is now? What distance Chicago? Oh, it's computational. See, oh, it's 2,000 miles. 0.2,000 miles worth. Well, as a matter of fact, Chicago is right here, sitting in front of my right eye. See? Here he is with everything caved in on him, and Chicago's there too. He's gotten terminal collapse. See, he's one terminal, Chicago's another terminal, and he's got them. Bong! Well, there's another way to go about this same process, is what wouldn't you mind occupying the same space as you're occupying? That's the basic thing of a universe. A universe cannot be built that has space and energy in it unless you must first assume that two things cannot occupy the same space. And then if you were to study Alfred Lord Karzybski for any length of time, he would convince you that two things couldn't occupy the same space, and by convincing you, would make this universe one of the most solid traps anybody ever got into. All you've got to do is get the impossibility of two things occupying the same space, and you're going to have a universe of one kind or another. See? So what wouldn't you mind occupying the same space with you comes right along with 5 and 6, which is remedy of havingness and spotting spots in space. And that is a killer. That is really a killer as a process. It's a murderous process. Because it's directly in the teeth of a general semanticist, you'll get into an argument. By the way, before you got to this with a general semanticist, you will have gotten into an argument already on whether you meant fear or whether, did you really mean remember? Now, let's see. By remember, you meant Let's see now, remember, because they know very well that nobody knows what anybody else says. You know, the words all mean different things to different people. That's the premise on which they go. That is taught in the American universities today, so expect it to be found in any educated preclear that you run into. Just that one little foible that people really don't know what other people are saying because words have different values to each of us. And when you say coffee, well, coffee is one thing to somebody and it's something else to someone. Apathy, apathy, apathy. Can't communicate, that's all they're dramatizing. Actually, coffee is coffee. And if you have a lot of associated ideas to the subject of coffee, if you're bad enough off so that all your ideas are in association with all your ideas, see first book, A equals A equals A equals A, everything is identified, why then, of course, coffee is liable to mean horse to you. But if you can communicate even vaguely, you know what you're talking about and you know what he is talking about when you say coffee. You also know what he's talking about when he said it was real bright red. See? Actually, he couldn't express it as a painting formula without the most fantastic color denominations, you know? All kinds of codifications, so forth, to say exactly what red this was. It's spectrometer reading and so forth. But you say it was very bright red. And the other fellow says, you know, it was very bright red. That's good enough, you see. And that's a communication. Look at here. That remark in the field of the general semanticist tells you that we can't duplicate. See, nobody knows what everybody else is saying because when somebody says coffee, then that means something else to somebody else. In other words, can't duplicate, can't communicate. And we're back to opening procedure by duplication. But it just so happens that a universe will only hang apart, not hang together. Universes have to hang apart. As long as you do not believe that two things occupy the same space or that this is possible. You say, take a physicist, and he's batty on the subject of conservation of energy, and two things can't occupy the same space. Okay, these are the two batty things in physics. They're very batty, too. And they account for the physiognomies of the people you saw in Look magazine many issues ago, many, many issues ago, on the articles of the Nuclear Physicists of America. And I found out I was out of communication with these people when I was studying nuclear physics, so I went and browsed around and gnawed on a few books on some other subjects. These people believed utterly that you could not create energy. Their motto is, it's all been done before, it's all been done before. Tell them a story plot. Oh, well, that's been done before. There's really nothing new in this universe anyplace. Well, that's just a dramatization on a thought level of the conservation of energy. So if you can't create energy, what must their havingness be? And if two things can't occupy the same space, what must their havingness be? They would get so desperate that the only thing they could think of, let's blow it all up, let's waste everything. They'd have to waste the whole universe, wouldn't they? And you'll find out the waste and remedy of havingness, the state of the person's remedy of havingness, he is dramatizing on his immediate environment. If he'd have to waste a lot before he could have, you'll find him chewing up his car. You will find him inventing atom bombs. You will find him doing all kinds of things. You know, appropriating money to the I Will Arise Burial Society at Fort Knox. Doing anything. The U.S. government can't have gold, obviously, because they got it all buried. That isn't their gold. It doesn't belong to them at all. They just say it does, and they got more bayonets than anybody else, so they're going to waste that gold. Fantastic, isn't it? By the way, a good auditor can do this trick. A knowing expanded Gita, knowing remedy of havingness, knowing how much space the fellow could have by how much he could spot in space. He could actually watch a fellow working and know exactly what the man was wasting. He'd know what the man couldn't have then. Watch a fellow working, look at his possessions, and he would know immediately what the fellow couldn't have. Because with all the things he couldn't have would be the things he couldn't do. You see, the do scale comes right in there. We see somebody looking through a card file, and he's looking through this card file endlessly. And he goes and he looks through it endlessly again, and he's looking for Jones RG. And you go over and you look in the card file, and it's right there, right after Isaacs, immediately after Isaacs is Jones. And you say, well, there it is. And he said, well, I'll be darned. I've been over it a dozen times. He's just trying to waste names. Now, if you talked to him, you'd find out that he didn't have many friends. Or if he did have, he kind of gave him a kick in the teeth. And also, this peculiar thing would take place. You'd find out that he occasionally had moments when he couldn't remember his own name. You know, somebody asked him suddenly, "What is your name?" He'd say, he'd run a comlag. And that's all a comlag is. It's all into the subject of havingness. If a fella has to waste it first, he'll comlag on it. And that's what remedy of havingness and so forth on a thought level. This is very elementary, the way it ties all together. Now, he can have space to the degree that he believes he can have things. See, if he can have lots of havingness, then he can have space too. The truth of the matter is, though, that space cuts down knowingness, and so does havingness. The motto of all mess is stupidity. The floor, the ceiling, these things are stupid. They don't know. If they were to know anything, it would be because you pushed them into a form, which they could then telegraph as form. Look at a cannon sometime. It knows it's a cannon. That's all it knows. That's all it tells you. I'm a cannon. Okay. Look at Mr. Smythe of General Motors. He knows he is Mr. Smythe. And by golly, he'll act remarkably like a piece of mist. You see this? When a fellow can only be one identity, he's really drifting down toward a piece of mist. See? The whole subject of identity is wrapped up then in havingness. A cannon can have no other form than a cannon. Unless you come along and melt it up and make an iron deer out of it. See, and then it's an iron deer. But it got the identity from somebody else. We'll get this custom of naming babies. The Indians were a little higher toned when they let the baby choose his own name, huh? All right, a man is as fixed as he has an identity. All this under remedy of havingness. So in these two categories, we do a lot of work. But how in the world could an auditor work with these people if he didn't have, one, a two-way communication, two, a good command of elementary straight wire, three, if he couldn't do opening procedure of 8C, four, if he couldn't do opening procedure by duplication? I mean, if he didn't know these things, it would do him no good at all to know about havingness, remedy of havingness as far as curricular was concerned. He could go around and give lectures on it, or talk about it, or argue about it, or write some other version of it. He could do all kinds of things like this, but as far as sitting down and running it on a preclear so as to produce a benefit, in that case, he wouldn't be able to do it because the first four steps leading up to it would be missing. All right, there's some other things which are absolutely essential, but these are part of the others. Here we have elementary straight wire. At the same time, we have to teach the auditor's code, don't we? And if we're teaching the auditor's code, we should also mention the two other codes of Scientology. And as far as opening procedure of 8C is concerned, we would have to teach something about orders and commands and authority, or pan-determinism. We'd have to teach something about pan-determinism. Pan-determinism. You have to be willing to determine more than the course of your own body in order to determine anything. If you can't determine more than the course of your own body, you can't determine the sanity of a preclear, can you? In all past ologies, men studied the mind. And in that all by itself lay the reason for their complete failure. And it was a complete failure, I'm sorry to say. 22% got well, but then the 22% would have gotten well if somebody gave them a new dress or a birthday cake. See that? I mean, the obvious people that would recover anyhow recovered. And the real reason was they stood back and studied the mind. And we run immediately into the reason why Dianetics is Dianetics and psychology is psychology. Psychology is the study of. Let's observe, let's observe, let's observe. Let's be spectators. Let's go to the fights and watch the wrestling. Let's go to the football game and sit in the stands. That would be high level. Let's observe, let's observe. Let's not act. Let's not do. Let's not be. Let's not control anything else but us. And everything else we will make automatic. And it will all become automatic. In Dianetics, we have a precision science of a certain number of common denominators to existence. In Scientology, we have a precision study of life, and a certain number of phenomena have been demonstrated, and these phenomena are workable in the broad application of life, and it's not a speculation. And psychology is a speculation, and psychology doesn't have any axioms of any kind. It's just, let's all get together and speculate. And they've speculated now since almost the middle of the 19th century, and we're 100 years almost after the origin of psychology, and they have yet to hit upon a principle on which all psychologists will agree, except one, and that is, we all ought to study. They got that in common. Well, therefore, you're not there to study this preclear. And this is the central difference between what you're doing and what's been done before. You're not there to study what this preclear is doing. You're there to determine the future course of his existence in terms of a betterment of action and performance. And if you're unwilling to do that as an auditor, he's not going to get very much better. He's going to slop off and dog off and make mistakes and do this and that, and you let him get away with it because you're letting him be self-determined. Now, we didn't understand this entirely in Dianetics. But when we said self-determinism, two or three times I wrote essays on the subject, which I don't think are around particularly, and these essays all boil down to the fact that if we really say self-determinism, we must be talking about the eight dynamics, you see? So in order to shake out this error, let's introduce this word pan-determinism. That doesn't mean that you're here to control others. It means that you're here to be willing to. If you're not willing to, you won't ever control yourself, because life is composed of eight dynamics. Now, pan-determinism, therefore, enters into opening procedure of 8C because it's the auditor giving orders to the preclear. One of the reasons the preclear gets well is he thinks he'd be killed if he accepted an order. And by golly, here he's accepting orders and executing them, and nothing happens. Bad to him, he gets better, so on. What do you know, he can't obey an order. Now, if he can't obey orders and you try to run opening procedure by duplication, you're going to have a horrible time. Now, on elementary straight wire, you will very often ask a fellow one question and he answers another one to himself, but answers yours to you. And there's where 8C licks that difficult case. See, you'd run into a bug there if all you knew was really elementary state wire. And once in a while, you'd run into a bug. And that bug would be a very, very prominent bug. And it would be the preclear who sits there and apparently runs all the auditing commands and isn't running a single one of them. You go around to people who don't get well easily and check them off, and each one of them will tell you, no, I don't run the auditor's commands. You can really get them down, put them on the E-meter, say, let's take our hair down here, fella. Well, yeah, I've been run all week by that fellow. No, I didn't run any engrams. Did you tell him that you were? Well, yes. You get the idea. He wasn't following orders. Now, there's number 7, which we have to mention. I say there's extra material goes along with those things, but you have to know those 6 very well, and the 7th one. 7 is entirely wrapped up with science of survival, and is science of survival, and in particular, the chart of human evaluation in science of survival. Find out that all too few auditors know this material. The chart of human evaluation and the basic stuff, the real basic stuff of ARC, and that's in science of survival. The best way to go about that is simply read and study science of survival and look over the chart very well. Now, for reasons of your explanation to the public at large, there's a little pamphlet on the axioms of Dianetics, which you should also look over, because these are fast communication, very fast communication, and you should know these yourself. That's the most elementary. That's just for communication to the general public. You should know these things. That goes along with, of course, science of survival, because these things are more or less treated in science of survival. Now, it's a requisite before you study all this that you should have read Book 1, naturally. Well, we're not teaching Book 1. There is too much in it to teach. It is probably the most complicated, diverse text you ever want to run into. People read it today and they say, well, you said all that in Book 1. Yeah, well, where were the people in 1950? I had to find out what they thought I was saying, not what I was saying. All right. So, a normal course then could be lined up on this basis, which would simply run week after week after week, with tremendous benefit. On Mondays, you would teach two-way communication and Comlag. On Tuesday, you teach elementary straight wire, the auditor's code, and the other codes of Scientology. On Wednesday, you would teach opening procedure of HC. On Thursday, you would teach opening procedure by duplication. On Friday, you would teach the remedy of havingness. On Saturday, you would teach the spotting of spots in space. And on Sunday, you would have the students study the chart of human evaluation and read Science of Survival. And on Monday, the same student would get two-way communication with a communication lag. On Tuesday, he would get elementary straight wire. On Wednesday, he would get opening procedure of HC. And after he'd gone through that week, he'd hit Monday, two-way communication. The Southern Methodist made a study one time as to how many times you had to utter a datum before students got it. 9 times. Nine times. And they would normally, as a group, have it perfectly. Okay, now this is the spot we are jumping off from, the knowledge of these procedures, 7 of them. All right, now then it's up to this unit to swallow them all quick, because we haven't got time to say them 9 times. You have just about 13 more days to get all of them. And therefore, I'm instructing your instructor to push on them real heavy. One right after the other. Good and hard and heavy until we've all got them down pat. Then we can get down to what you should be studying, which is the axioms of Scientology and the 60 processes contained therein. Every one of the 60, however, each one of them is based only and totally upon these processes. There's one other process you could teach, which is significances, but it's relatively unimportant. Compared to these, it's relatively unimportant. Significances are less important than the remedy of havingness any day of the week. But a knowledge of these 7 gives you a knowledge of life, a good, solid working knowledge of life, and gives you the wherewithal to break cases, and gives you all the information you need to use the auditor's handbook, including intensive procedure printed edition. And so we'd better get good on these. Okay.